Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you a unique look in the cosmetic industry. This is episode 235. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today is Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry.
You know, Valerie, I just said a unique, but is that grammatically correct? Shouldn't it be an unique? Because you is a vowel?
Yeah, interesting. Does it apply to the adjective or the noun?
Well, whenever you have that I or a vowel, you use the A-N. English is such a complicated
language.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, do we have any grammar nerds who can correct Perry?
I know. Is this the grammar brains that you've tuned into? No, you've tuned into
the
beauty brains.
We were English majors, people. We were science majors.
But we do like math, so I think last
we're not good at math, but we like it.
Wait a second. I know a little bit about math, you know. But this is not the math brains, this or the grammar brains. This is the beauty brains. And on today's show, we're going to be answering lots of questions. One, about whether common product preservatives can cause hair loss. Whether it's bad to not trim your hair. I haven't got a haircut in like 6 months. So
oh, we'll
I'm
talk about
forward
it.
To that answer. Yep. Whether expensive skincare products are really worth the cost. Whether lab-created fragrances work the same as natural ones and can cause the same sort of allergic reactions. And how does cowboy magic work for horse hair, and does it work on people?
Ooh.
But first, Valerie, why don't we do a little of our famous chit-chats? Now, I was looking at it must have been your Instagram feed, and you had put a picture of a book about, I don't know, chemistry or science
well,
or something.
The
and
title
I recall,
was Chemistry, yep.
There you go. And I recall you had a goal of, what, reading 50 books this year? Or
52, one
like
per
that.
Week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, one book a week. That's right. And how's that coming for you?
It's coming along. I'm a little slower posting on Instagram what I'm reading, but I just had a birthday weekend and we went away to Palm Springs to celebrate. And I brought
That's
a big
right.
stack.
Happy of, birthday.
Thank you. I brought a big stack of books with me to try to get through because I checked them out from the library and the library wants them back. So it was a perfect weekend to be able to do that.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Palm Springs, that's in California, and I saw that the entire state is on fire, so how was the air quality there?
I was actually really fortunate to leave LA because it's horrible in LA, even indoors smells like smoke, but in Palm Springs, it's way out in the desert, so it wasn't as bad. The sun was still a little bit blocked from the smoke, but it was actually pretty good, so I was able to get some pool time. I sat in the shade, of course, and wore sunscreen and a hat. and a sun thing over my bathing suit. But yeah, it was really good. I usually like to read nonfiction books. I just like learning facts and hearing stories. And so I won't spoil the stack that I was reading, but I have some really good books, not just about science, but also just about things that are going on, history. Actually, I'll just tell you a couple hints. I'm reading.
Sure. Tell us. What do we
got? When I read about a topic, like I go big, like I do a big bender of like the same topic. So I'm reading about the mafia.
Oh, you're so a bunch of mafia books.
Yeah.
It's the Italian mob. Is that what we're talking about?
Correct. Okay. The Italian mob.
Well, I mean, is the mafia, is like the Russian mafia? That's a thing, right?
Yeah. Are you a made man, Perry? I'll tell you what that means later.
I am not a made man. I don't even clean up the kitchen. You know, Valerie, I just got back from a trip, too. I did a driving trip down to St. Simon Island in Georgia.
You know, when you first told me you were going to Georgia, I was like, I didn't know Georgia was on the ocean. And then you were like, no, Georgia, United States, not Georgia, Eastern Europe. And I was like, oh, sounds like I need to read a book about geography. But
that's right. Well, that's right. Georgia is that country that used to belong to the Soviet Union, I guess, right?
And it actually is on, it is on the sea, not on the ocean, but it is on the Black Sea.
Indeed. Well, this was a wonderful island. And actually on the way there, on the road trip, I stopped in Columbia, South Carolina, which is the capital.
Yep.
And I stopped to see the largest fire hydrant in the world.
That's kind of neat. I always love those little fun things on road trips.
There's an excellent app. If you're going to do a road trip, there's an app called Road Trippers.
Oh, cool.
Which you put in your path where you're going, and then it'll say what the like side trip you should do is.
Like the little cool things, yeah.
Largest fire hydrant in the world was one of those.
So. Well, you got to stop for that. Yeah. Do a bathroom break.
Exactly. I also read a book while I was on the beach in St. Simon Island, and I finished the book Caesar's Last Breath by Sam Keen. Are you familiar with Sam Keen books?
I have one of his books in my library shelf to borrow when I return all the other items I owe the library.
Well, the first book of his that I read was called The Disappearing Spoon, and he just went through all of the elements of the periodic table and give a little history. It was a wonderful book.
Well, yes. That's the book in my library cart, so that's exciting to hear. It's good.
I highly recommend that one. And he did, the book that I just read was his follow-up was Caesar's Last Breath, and it was about the chemistry of air, the history of like balloon flight and all just how we discovered gases. It's just really great. I mean, I really love the guy's stuff.
Well, those are two great recommendations for any of our fans who like to read about science.
There you go. And speaking of science, how about we go into Beauty Science News? The first story that I saw today, well, not today, but this week, according to an article in The Telegraph, the average male's attention during a shopping trip with a wife or a girlfriend lasts just about 26 minutes before he gets bored. I love that people are out there doing studies like this.
Yeah, Mr. Cosmetic Chemist is 2.6 minutes.
Oh, he's not a big shopping fan.
No, but he has a trick. When I go shopping, he literally walks as close to my heels as possible so that I get super annoyed and won't roam around the racks to shop.
Well, this article cites a study of 2,000 Britons, which found that 8 out of 10 men found clothes shopping with their partner was boring. Oh, I can't believe it was only 8 out of 10. Come on.
Oh, my goodness.
And then 45% admitted they avoid shopping with their female partners altogether. I have to say that I am guilty as charged. I am not a big fan of shopping at all. However, I have to say, traditionally, I've hated shopping, and I don't want to go, and I get out of it as I can. But ever since the invention of two things that I've discovered, I find shopping much more tolerable. And you know what those things are?
Ooh, Amazon.
No. But I will say, number one is the iPhone. Oh. And I can bring the iPhone with me while my wife is scanning the clothes racks. I'm just scrolling through Reddit or
that's what most men
Twitter.
Do. Yeah. You yep. Know.
Yes. There you go. Or I'm listening to a podcast or a book or something like that. Those things really have changed my life.
What's the second thing?
I started meditating about 3 years ago, and meditation has allowed me to never get bored ever.
That's great.
Because if I'm in a situation where I feel bored, then I just start these meditation exercises. And boy, I can just sit and pay attention to my breath for like 30 minutes without doing anything.
Yeah, meditation really is fantastic. I started doing it a couple years ago to slow my heart rate down. I have a heart thing. And I really, really enjoy it. I will say it is football season, by the way. And that is how Mr. Cosmetic Chemist can tolerate shopping, because he doesn't even know I'm here. So I disappear and I go shopping and I come back and it's like I never left, because he's still buried in the TV.
my wife prefers that I go shopping with her.
Aww.
Not because she actually, well, not because she actually wants me to go shopping, but she just wants me to drive. She doesn't like driving.
You're the chauffeur. Aw.
I am. And I do not mind being the chauffeur, quite frankly.
Well, I saw something on the news this week, a report that 64% of consumers are unaware of the blue light impact on their skin. One of your favorite topics, blue light.
Blue light, yeah. That's, I mean, this microphone I have has a blue light. Is that killing my skin? Is that...
Well, Unilever says so. They did a study where 60% of consumers spend more than 6 hours a day in front of a digital device. And I'm presuming that all of those devices are emitting blue light.
Like this laptop that I'm in front of right now.
Laptop, iPhone, iPad.
iPhone, sure, sure. Yeah,
if you're still using a Palm Pilot, probably that. But anyway, they have said that 5 working days on a phone can have the same impact on skin as if you spent 25 minutes in the midday sun without protection.
Now, how are you going to measure that?
Yeah. And also, I feel like we have done a lot of looking for scientific studies that are done to try to prove that long-term exposure to blue light has some negative impact. And we just haven't been able to find those studies. Now, Unilever is a brand. They're not like some university or a scientific entity. And I'm sure that they have done some studies because they employ scientists and their goal is to create products. Of course, you know, they suggest that there are some ingredients that consumers can protect themselves with. Surely that some of their products have those ingredients. The article didn't report on that, but Unilever is in the business of selling products. But they also say that consumers exposed to 30 hours of blue light from a smartphone or laptop screen can increase their inflammation level in skin cells by 40%. Blue light can induce immediate and persistent pigmentation, inhibit melatonin generation, increase stress hormone levels, excite nerves, which can disturb sleeping patterns. So they say that there's all these issues, and they say that the reason you should care is that since COVID has happened, people are spending so much more time this year with screen time, which,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I worked for sure. Yeah. We're consuming media. We're looking at our phones. We're working longer hours, but I don't know. I think the biggest impact from limiting your screen time, I mean, I wouldn't go spend money on a product that honestly probably doesn't have any blue light inhibition. I would reduce screen time to reduce stress from the constant exposure to just all the external stimuli from the world. I think that's causing the bigger problem.
You know what? I'm gonna backpedal on that for sure and say that's crap because I haven't put any more blue light on. I always was in front of my computer, right?
And you're looking younger than ever.
People who go into the office, they were just going to the office and they were sitting in front of their computers, right? It's not like we're doing more, right? I don't know. Maybe it's a little more, but come on. Who are you crapping, Unilever? I don't believe that. I'm always skeptical of studies that are put out by companies who stand to benefit from you buying a product that's going to solve this new problem that they discovered.
Yep.
Right? And
for sure.
I've looked at there has been a fair amount of information published about blue light, and it always seems like a stretch to demonstrate that this is some huge problem that you need products to address. I just have not seen data that would back that up. Now, I've seen other people have suggested that it is a problem, but they're usually working for companies who have solutions to this problem that I think is a little bit made up. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess better safe than sorry. I can't see any harm in using these ingredients or products, but I did feel it was a little like, oh my gosh, the world is ending. You know, you're so unprotected. You know, I just don't like that kind of stuff, you know. But if you want to protect yourself from blue lights, totally legitimate to want to do that as a precaution, but whether or not that has any value.
For sure.
To be told.
I would totally agree with you that there's probably no downside to it, but you're probably wasting your money. Which is true of a lot in the beauty industry. I think that's one of the ways to become a smarter consumer is to know that beauty companies are looking for things that you think are problems or things that could potentially be problems, and we are trying to find solutions to those things that may or may not be problems. To me, blue light is one of those things that there's some evidence for it, but if you ignored it for your whole life, you're not going to notice an extra wrinkle, at least in my opinion.
I would say the stressors of the world would cause more wrinkles. That's how I feel. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's probably better to just stop smoking. I don't know if you're worried about wrinkles.
Yeah.
How about we get into some beauty questions?
We've got some great questions today.
Hey, our first one is an audio question. You know how we love the audio question?
We do, and we prioritize them first. If you guys want to guarantee being featured on our show, you can first subscribe to Patreon. We'll tell you how to do that later. And second, our audio listeners get priority. Just simply use your smartphone, record a question, and send it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
Misty sent us a question. Let's cue that one up now.
Hello, Beauty Brains. This is Misty. I was just wanting to know what your thoughts were on the DivaCurl scandal. There are a lot of users who are reporting hair loss, scalp problems, and loss of their curl pattern. I never was really a fan of DivaCurl products, but never really used them long term. Mainly just not liking co-washing and preferring shampoos, which kind of reminds me of the Wynn debacle a few years ago. I was just wondering if there was any research that maybe co-washing only can contribute to some of these problems that DivaCurl users are experiencing, just thinking that that seems to be one thing that DivaCurl and Wynn have in common, that they do just use conditioner for washing. Some of the users are speculating that there may be some other ingredients in the products that are harmful by looking them up on EWG's website or Think Dirty. And I was also just a little curious if you thought there was anything harmful in their products, particularly the no poo product that they sell. Thank you.
Well, thanks for that question, Misty. Valerie, we talked about the DivaCurl and the Wynn debacles a few episodes ago. I think most recently was on episode 210. You recall that?
I sure do. This has been a hot topic.
I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the segment we did on episode 210. But I wanted to address the other part of this question, and that was specifically about whether DMDM hydantoin or diazolidinyl urea was the ingredients that were responsible for causing the hair loss. So first, before we address that specifically, these ingredients, diazolidinyl urea and DMDM hydantoin, these are common preservatives used in hair care products. They're actually pretty good preservatives for rinse-off products.
Yeah, they're really great. And what I like about them is they tend to have low irritancy, which, you know, we'll talk about, but you also use them at very, very small levels, which is really important to avoid sensitization of individuals.
Whenever you want to see the safety information about cosmetic ingredients, I would say don't go to apps like Think Dirty, or don't go to the Environmental Working Group's Skin Deep database, because these databases and these apps, they're not written by people who have any scientific background. They do not have degrees in toxicology, and they are just not reliable. These are really created by what I call fearmongers who want to spread chemophobia, and they really do exist just to scare consumers. So following their advice really does not make you safer, and in fact, I think it actually makes you a little less safe because you're using products that are using ingredients that haven't been proven safe for as many years as the ingredients that they tell you to avoid. But anyway, following their advice certainly makes you use products that, at the very least, they're less likely to be effective, I personally think. So don't go to the EWG or the Think Dirty apps to get your information about chemical safety. Now, where you do get chemical safety information is the CIR. Remember the Cosmetic Ingredient Review? We talked about these guys before.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to the Cosmetic Ingredient Review just to give a little refresher on these ingredients. And both of these ingredients have a long history of use. And the CIR has looked at these ingredients. You know how groups like the EWG say, you know, thousands of cosmetic ingredients have never been evaluated for tests for safety. Well, most of the preservatives actually have been evaluated for safety by toxicologists. And the CIR reviewed DMDM hydantoin and other formaldehyde donor preservatives as used in cosmetics, and they concluded that based on the available data included in the report that they had, it's concluded that DMDM hydantoin and imidazolidinyl urea are safe as cosmetic ingredients over typical practice uses. And typical means that they used up to a level of 1%. So the bottom line is these preservatives are safe for use in cosmetics.
And no one's really using it even at those levels. It's used at really a very tiny amount. And to put the formaldehyde exposure into perspective about what formaldehyde could be released as the preservative is decomposing and doing its job is equivalent to the amount of formaldehyde naturally occurring in a medium-sized pear or apple. That's like the, you know, quote that we like to use in the industry. Right. It's really like negligible, right? You're not worried about eating an apple. I mean, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Maybe it's the very minute intrinsic formaldehyde. I don't know. We didn't know it, but it's really such a very tiny amount. You're exposed to more formaldehyde and other occurrences in your life for sure.
And your liver creates formaldehyde. So it's the fear of this ingredient is just crazy. But now let's talk about specifically, is that causing hair loss? In looking through these reports, there were some studies that showed a very slight irritation when the solution was applied as a 55% solution.
Which is way higher than it would ever be used.
Yeah. Right. You never use that. But it was non-irritating when used at standard levels, the kind of you'd find in a product. But most importantly, there was no evidence of hair loss. And the same is true of diazolidinyl urea. The bottom line is there's also no evidence of dermal irritation. So while there may have been some ingredient in the Diva Curl or the Wen products that contributed to hair loss, now whether there was hair loss from those products or not, there seems there's something there. But the bottom line is it's these preservatives are not the things that's causing the hair loss. I don't specifically know which ingredient might be doing that. It could be just the whole formula building up, but it's not the preservatives.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. I really think it's the style of washing your hair, and it's leaving ingredients. They have lots of botanicals in this formula. Those have a higher propensity to cause irritation. We've gone over that and even discussed a Dermatology JAMA editorial ad nauseum in previous episodes. So yeah, don't blame the preservation. I don't have an option for what else to blame, but don't blame the preservation.
When there is a problem with it, with a formula, you know, it does make sense to go to the preservative if the preservative is at a really high level. But the most common things that it's going to be, some ingredient in the fragrance or some botanical extract. Those are the most likely culprits for causing problems.
Oh, yeah. Well, our next question comes to us from Christina. She says, big fan of the Beauty Brains here. I, well, need you. I'm a very low maintenance girl, I guess, and I go to the hairdresser once a year mainly to trim double ends. This year, I might want to skip it because of COVID, but I realized the last time I went for a trim was in November last year. My question is,
wow,
is it really bad for you, for your hair, not to trim it regularly? I do not have any split ends at the moment, and the quality of my hair is pretty great, but I suffer from genetic alopecia and am wondering if not cutting my hair could have any impact, although I doubt it considering the lengths are basically dead. If you have a moment, I would love your view on it. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I haven't got my hair cut since March, maybe February. It's been a while. I'm looking a little shaggy, huh?
Well, the good news is, Perry, you're not doing a whole lot to your hair, right? Like, you occasionally brush it, maybe once a day you brush it, but you're not coloring, you're not perming, you're not swimming in heavily chemically treated water, you don't have copper in your pipes, so...
No, every so often what I do is... When I take a shower after I've gone running, I will just wash my running clothes when I'm showering. And I take my my running shorts and I'll just scrub it in my shampooed head. And
all that mechanical damage.
I know, the mechanical damage.
Well, for the rest of us humans, I'll go into why it may or may not be a good idea for you to trim your hair. So...
Yeah, what do we got here? Trimming?
It really depends on your hair structure and what you do to it. If you're doing a lot of styles and you're washing your hair absolutely every day and you've done chemical treatments on the past, you probably need a trim. I work in a lab that has a full-blown testing salon in it, and we are back open for guests. Don't worry, we're doing everything safely according to state standards. But I'm seeing women come in who haven't been able to get their hair done since we closed in March. And so that's 6 months. It's not quite November. And some of their hair is fine, and some of them, it's lots of mechanical damage, lots of split ends. And I've even said, after their color application was done, hey, do you have a couple minutes? I would love for one of my stylists to trim your hair. And of course, I'm getting dagger looks from the stylist. I'm just kidding. They're a great team, and they don't mind doing it because it's really important to keep the hair healthy. And that is because, you know, people have this perception that, oh, I need products on my scalp to keep my hair growing. The biggest benefit you can have to keep your hair growing is actually to prevent breakage. And breakage happens towards the ends. Your hair is dead, but it's biologically dead, but it's chemically alive, right? So the chemistry of your hair is changing over time, and the protein structure starts to weaken, and eventually the hair will break off, and then you have a shorter hair again. And you want to prevent that. And the way to prevent that is to, continually condition and lubricate your hair over the course of its life, but you periodically
use conditioners, people.
You periodically want to get it trimmed. Now, if you're looking at your hair and you don't notice split ends and it doesn't appear to be razzled looking, I think you should be fine and you can go to the salon when you feel perfectly safe. The one thing that I could think of in having your hair continually get longer, if you are concerned about genetic alopecia, I don't think not trimming will have the hair fall out. But if your hair is growing long and you get into these habits, like I wear my hair in a bun, literally every day, because that's what girls in the lab do when they have long hair, they put their hair back in a bun. It's kind of like the standard look. So that mechanical damage, or even just pulling it up all the time, can pull and tug at hairs, and they can prematurely loosen from the scalp, especially if you have a super tight bun or pony. So you just want to be gentle to your hair as you're wearing it and styling it, even if you're not going anywhere. And that should help mitigate any hairs from breaking from mechanical or physical torsion, or just from being really tense on the head. But people will live if they don't go get a trim. You'll survive. You may just need more cut off when you go. But if you feel fine, that you look fine and you're not too worried, you should be totally fine. I did get this question on my Instagram, by the way. So thank you, Christina, for sending that in.
All right, let's go on to the next question. This one comes to us from Stacy. Stacy says, hey, I'm new to the podcast, but so far I love it. We love it too. Thanks. There's so much information out there, and it's nice to hear from people that actually have science to back up what they are saying. I'm turning 30 this year, and oh boy, I remember when I turned 30.
I remember when I thought 30 was old. I'm like, I'm so old, and I'm on the 40s door here.
Well, Stacy says, I'm turning 30 this year and barely started getting into skincare over the past year. Horrible, I know, but better late than never, right? Many people recommend very pricey products, and I just can't justify spending nearly $100 for one product. The most expensive product I own is maybe $30. So are pricier products really more effective and worth the cost, or will my lower cost items still get the job done? Are there certain types of products, moisturizers, eye creams, serums, that I should splurge on rather than going the cheaper route? Thanks for any advice that you can give. Oh boy, well, I think this question was kind of one of the questions that really started the Beauty Brains way back in 2006. So anyway, this question here is one that we really wanted to cover because one of the things you learn as a scientist in it is that the price of your formulas almost never is reflected in the price of how much a brand is going to charge. Now, I'm not saying there's no connection there. I worked on the VO5 shampoo brand, and boy, we could make a bottle of shampoo for about 10 cents.
Come on, Perry, that was several decades ago. I'm just kidding.
I know, but maybe now it costs 15 cents. But you know, if you're going to sell a bottle of shampoo in the store for 99 cents, you got to say the store will take a half a cut of that. So the store is going to take, what, 50 cents on for every bottle. And then so your distributor takes another 25 cents. And so you've got to make your profit in that 25 cents that's left.
That's really tough. Wow.
I know. We were making, at one point, we were making 5 cents a bottle in profit on every bottle of VO5 sold. So to make products like that, you have to cut costs with raw materials and make them cheaper. But there is a point where if you're getting to mid-tier products, the extra cost in the sales price of the product is not really a reflection of how much the ingredients are costing you. So I look at products that are put out by Unilever or Procter & Gamble, like Olay or Pantene, Fructus or Garnier. These things, you know, they're selling for, I don't know, $4 or $5 a bottle. There's no way it's costing them that much more to make those shampoos or those hair care products or the skincare products for that matter, as far as the raw materials go.
Well, I think when you move, though, that's in the mass arena. And by the way, I love inexpensive sulfated shampoos for sure. I'm a Pantene user and people want to like throw their hairbrushes at me at work. I think Pantene makes a great shampoo. I also like Garnier Fructis. That's my go-to sulfated shampoo when I'm not, you know, when I'm at the store and I'm like, oh shoot, I need more sulfated shampoo and I didn't bring one home from work or I don't want to make one. So that being said, but I do think when you move into like the more premium category, there's a price difference between those two in the formulas for sure. But that doesn't mean a $60 shampoo is necessarily better in that case than that.
You are completely right there. And that is only it's not a matter of the ingredients that they're using. What happens there is a company like Procter & Gamble or Unilever or L'Oreal, they can buy their raw materials for a lot less money than, say, a smaller company.
Yeah.
Say the Juice Beauties out there or the you know, Burt's Bees works for a big company now, so they can probably get good prices. But your smaller companies, The Ordinary, for example, these companies are just smaller, so they can't buy as much of the raw materials, so it costs them more money. But the bottom line is here, when you see a product that is on sale for $100 for a 2 ounce skincare product versus one that is $30 for a 2 ounce skincare product, the raw material costs between those two products are probably not really different, or they don't have to be different. They might be different for that particular company, but the price is not related to the amount of money that it costs to buy those raw materials. The cost is much more related to the marketing story that they're putting out. I look at some of the products that are put out by Dr. Perricone.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt that those products cost the company a lot of money to make. but what you get as a benefit from a consumer, you're not getting more of a benefit than you would get, say, from buying an Olay product.
Yeah.
And which is much less expensive. So the bottom line here is that, you know, the pricier products are not going to work better.
But they're going to make you feel better.
Right. And that gets us to this whole thing called the halo effect, right? You could buy exactly the same product. One is cost $30 and one costs $100. They could be exactly the same, but they're in different bottles and they have a different marketing story. You will actually believe that the one that costs $100 actually works better. Now, we couldn't show that it works better in the lab. We couldn't measure your transepidermal water loss on your skin and show that it works better. But you using that, knowing one costs $30 and one costs $100, you will actually believe the $100 one costs more. And this is what we refer to in the business as the halo effect, because the way your perception of how a product performs, it's not just related to how it actually performs. It's related to that to some extent, but it's also related to the story that goes with it, the fragrance that goes with it, the bottle that it comes in, the way that it's delivered, and all of that, and the price, actually. You can affect the way that you believe a product works just by how much it costs you to buy. It's not actually having any different effect, but it makes you believe that it does. And that's the halo effect. So in general, the price of the product of a cosmetic has almost nothing to do with performance, but it does make you think that it does. So save your money, your $30, fine.
And I would, you know, at the end of the day, though, if you are finding an expensive product that you really enjoy, it doesn't mean you're a fool per se. I personally think that you should use products that make you happy, especially if you have the budget to buy them. I just wouldn't go thinking that they work better than less expensive products. But, you know, there are a couple of Perricone products I really enjoy the feel of and the smell of, and that's why I use them. And yeah, I do a little cringe when I, you know, when I go to checkout, but that's what, you know, the Sephora 20% discounts for, right? Twice a year, you stock up on it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know me, if you love using it, keep buying it. When you have a product that makes you, you know, feel good, I think that helps with how you look good too. So,
yeah, but the bottom line is don't feel bad for using that. Don't feel bad for using that $30 product because it's probably working just as good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's some great products that are even less than $30 that you can pick up for sure. Well, our next question comes from Nita on Twitter. Hey, I have a question about allergies. If I'm allergic to apples, yes, Snow White here, and hazelnuts. Oh, man, I love hazelnuts. Ugh, I guess Nina doesn't eat Nutella. Anyway, would I get an allergic reaction from perfumes, oil sprays containing apple and hazelnut notes too? Do lab-created molecules work the same way as natural ones?
Oh, that's a very interesting question.
Yeah, this is a great question, actually. So I guess it depends what compounds in the apples or hazelnuts are making you allergic, because they may not be the same compounds that are used to make the olfactive character of an apple or hazelnut when you're smelling it. And in a lab, when they are recreating, let's say, the scent of a watermelon, they're not actually using watermelon extract to make these fragrances. They're using different blends, like maybe ethyl lavulinate, isoamyl isovalerate, and 2-methylbutyl acetate. I'm just making those up. Those are fragrance compounds. I don't know if those are the ones in watermelon, but those individual compounds carry very specific different notes. So if a perfumer says, I have to make this fragrance and it needs pineapple, there's no pineapple extract, right? They go grab ethyl lavulinate off the shelf. So they're very complex blends of multiple compounds that create this apple odor or create this hazelnut odor that you're using. And they may not be the same compounds that actually are isolated from the apple. Some of them may be, but in general, we're using synthetic compounds. Now, if there were lab-made compounds to recreate molecules from the apple responsible for its scent, those would be considered nature identical to synthetic identical. And yes, if that was causing your allergy, it would be a problem. But fragrance is so complex, even from the smell of a fruit, that it's really hard to take those compounds and create a perfume out of them. So I would steer clear. Actually, what I would do is I would steer my way right over to the dermatologist's office, and it's very easy to get a check on all of the different fragrance compounds. They do a patch test on your skin, and you can identify specifically which allergens are an issue for you in perfumes. Of course, you know, depending on how you're allergic, like I get cluster migraines with certain fragrances, you can experiment, but I wouldn't do that if you have a serious allergy. But two, I would be more concerned about things that you apply to your skin, or maybe that could come in contact with your mouth at some point in time. Like if you're putting a lotion on your hands and you have an apple extract or, you know, maybe hazelnut pieces in it, I would be more concerned about using something on your mouth or on your hands, and then you touch your mouth. Fragrance, not so much, just because of the way that these compounds are built. But the best way to find out, again, is to schedule an allergy test with your dermatologist. Of course, they probably already know you're allergic to apples and hazelnuts, but they could find out specifically in a safe environment if you're allergic to anything else that may be used in the cosmetics industry.
And I think one of the important things to realize is that there are a ton of different ways to create a synthetic apple scent, right? There isn't just, you don't take an apple, squeeze it out, and then, oh, there's apple scent. No, when you make a synthetic one, it becomes sort of an artistic rendition on what chemicals do I blend together to make an apple. And you can use completely different chemicals and make two things that smell like apples. The thing that you're allergic to is some sort of compound in the apple. And if you have an apple fragrance that doesn't contain that compound, well, then it's not going to cause the allergic reaction. But again, as Valerie said, the most important thing for you to do is to connect with a dermatologist and find out what exactly are you allergic to. But the ingestion of some apple product does not mean you're going to be allergic to synthetic apple fragrances.
Great question.
All right, we got one more question here. Look at us going 5 questions. Whoa, this is comes to us from Madeline. She says, "Hey, Beauty Brains, I have a horse. And when horse's hair gets really tangled, we use a product called Cowboy Magic. They have some other products, but the good stuff is the detangler. It's literally magic. So how does it work, and would it be safe to use on a human tangle? Thanks." Well, are you familiar with this Cowboy Magic detangler?
I'm not familiar with Cowboy Magic, but I am familiar with Mane and Tail, which I just really, you know, giggled at this question because it brought me back to my days where I would buy Mane and Tail shampoo. Back then, you still had to go to like a horse feed or, you know, animal supply store to get it. But now you can get it at Walmart. It's so mainstream. But yeah, I just had to chuckle because it brought me back to the days where I would go out into the country to this animal supply store in the county I lived in and stock up on my Mane and Tail horse shampoo.
I do remember Mane and Tail, and actually Mane and Tail is still out there. It's the big bottle at the bottom shelf at most places.
And the logo hasn't changed. It's pretty incredible.
Right. I do remember it did have a moment. So I was tickled a little bit hearing this. So I looked up this Cowboy Magic product. And I'm like, oh, what could be in there? Well, they have first their first quote on the back is, "It smells good too." I'm like, okay, I guess. But here is what they say is in it: silk protein and panthenol. Hey, we've heard those before.
Talk
they sound
about
like human ones.
Provitamin B5, same ingredient in Pantene, panthenol.
Before I get into the other ingredients, here's my favorite thing about this product. They have a claim on there that says, "Not tested on animals." It's a product for animals. How are you not testing this on animals?
Maybe right? It was tested on humans, you know? I don't know.
It's
but it's used on
for
animals.
Horses.
Yeah,
it's for horses. Why wouldn't it be tested on animals? All right. All right, I just found that kind of funny. But okay, let's look at the ingredients here. And the ingredients are the ingredients that you would imagine for a shine and detangler. The first ingredient, cyclopentasiloxane. You know that ingredient, right?
Yeah, it's a cyclic silicone, and it is responsible for having the most lightweight, lubricious slip that goes on your hair and then goes into the air.
Absolutely. And then the second ingredient there is dimethicone, another silicone that is going to leave shine. It's going to give slip. And so what you're looking at here is a product. The first two ingredients are silicones. There's no water in this product. It is just mostly silicones. And it's mostly the same kind of thing that you would get a shine spray. It would be exactly like a human shine spray. I don't know what the viscosity of this product is, but it's not surprising to me at all that this product gives you great slip, great shine, great detangling, and this would work perfectly fine for human hair too.
Yeah, it's interesting that people are so gravitated towards these horse products. I think just because horses have, I mean, hair. When I think horse, I think, whoa, look at this magic mane. You know, My Little Pony, the whole thing is about its tail. You know, like, whoa, look at this beautiful tail on it. So I can totally see why people gravitate towards it. If it's a good price, I could see using it. But, there's not really any conditioning agents in it. So I couldn't imagine that you'd get hair softening or anything like that. I personally would just use a regular old conditioner, but I could see how it does appear to do magic on the hair.
I would agree. I'm wondering, how do they get the panthenol to blend with those silicones? I don't think that's...
I was thinking a little bit of that. And even the silk amino acids are not, it's usually like a water-soluble extract. So very, very interesting.
Yeah, interesting. It would work for human hair, but, you know, it's not using any technology that's different from a regular human product. So you might as well just go with the human product.
Oh, yeah.
But still, come on, Cowboy Magic. How are you not testing on animals? It's a product for horses.
We should write them and ask them that very question. We're not being mean. We're just curious.
I'm super curious. All right. Speaking of curious, it looks like we've come to the end of the show, huh?
Thanks again, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, if you get a chance, can you go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review? That's going to help other people find the show and ensure that we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer. And you can do that by recording your question on your smartphone and then sending it in an email to thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
Also, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. And we have a Facebook page.
And today, we answered a question from Instagram and a question from Twitter. We also are on Patreon. Please join your dozens of other fans who have already subscribed. Go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe. That is going to ensure that we do not start the show with 5 minutes of mind-numbing commercials for products that we may or may not be using.
Oh, I hate when other podcasts do that, and I'm so grateful we can be commercial-free. Thanks again, everyone, for your support and for listening to today's episode. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone. You the cats.
Meow, meow, meow.
Kittens.